2. Off Dragon Island, Hanky Sound, Kingdom of Dolar.
Well, at least we've found them, Captain Arnold Stewart told himself. Of course, figuring out what to do with them now that we have is another problem.
Stewart smiled thinly, then grimaced as the leading Dolaran galleon fired another broadside. His own squall, bringing up the rear of the abbreviated, very abbreviated, Carizian battle line, had yet to engage, and it was going to be a while yet, unfortunately, before she could. The late morning sun was hot, burning down on the blue waters of Hanky Sound, the southern lobe of the Gulf of Dolar, and the green slopes of Dragon Island to the east, but the stiff breeze out of the northwest was brisk, almost chill. It piled up 9 or 10 foot waves, and the copper-bottomed squall forged along on her southeasterly heading at almost 7 knots under topgallants and single-reefed topsails, with the wind fine on her larboard quarter. The Dolaran ships, holding their course to the southwest on the starboard tack as the two forces slowly converged, had the wind nearly abeam. It was close to their best point of sailing, yet they were making no more than 6 knots. Unfortunately, they were between the Carizians and their intended prey, and there were 5 of them. 3 of the Dolarans were already in action with HMS Dart, leading the Carizian formation. Captain John Powell, Dart's skipper and the senior officer present, was a veteran of Rock Point, Crag Reach, and Darko Sound, and his ship was one of Sir Gwilym Manthir's newest vessels. Dart was actually 5.5 feet longer than Empress of Karas, Emperor Caleb's preferred flagship, yet she mounted 10 fewer guns. Sir Dustin Oliver had come to the conclusion that Empress of Karas was going to be overgunned, too heavily laden for her displacement, even before she'd been completed. The fact that she'd quickly begun to hog after she came into service, her keel bending upward amidships because of the heavy weights bearing down on the ends of her hull, had only confirmed his initial fears. Her powerful broadside had made her a fearsome foe, yet once it became obvious his concerns had been well-placed, there'd been little choice but to reduce her armament. Having seen the problem coming, however, he'd taken pains to avoid it when he designed the Sword of Karas-class ships, and in addition to reducing weights and increasing displacement, he'd experimented with diagonal planking as a means of further increasing her longitudinal strength. As a result, Dart carried her designed armament with ease. She mounted the same number of 30-pounders as Empress of Karas, but only 20 carronades, and the additional length on the gun deck seemed to have produced a higher rate of fire. And although she carried fewer of them, her carronades threw 57-pound round shot instead of 30-pound shot, which actually increased her weight of broadside. She also carried her guns slightly higher, and her scantlings were thicker. All of that made her the ideal ship to be leading the Carizian line at this particular moment, but it didn't change the fact that she was engaged against 3 enemy vessels. HMS Shield, Dart's next astern, would be able to come to her assistance in the next 10 or 15 minutes, but Squall had been detached up to windward when the enemy was spotted. Her merchant ship origins also made her, little though Stewart liked admitting it, the slowest sailor of the 3, and she'd lost ground on her consorts during the pursuit. It was evident she was still faster than the Dolaran galleons, yet on their present courses, she was at least 40 minutes, more likely an hour, from any range at which she could engage. On the other hand, the 2 rearmost vessels in the Dolaran formation lagged almost as badly.
But they're not supposed to be keeping formation this well.
Stewart realized his own thoughts sounded plaintive, almost petulant.
Sir Gwilym told us Thirsk was the most dangerous fellow on the other side, but this is ridiculous.
It was mostly a fluke that they'd encountered this convoy in the first place. Captain Powell's detachment had been cruising off the northeast coast of Shui Province's Harris Peninsula,
looking for shipping in the waters between Parrot Point to the north and Sandy Head to the south. They'd had reports that foundries in Shwe were shipping guns to the Dolorin yards in Gorath, and Sir Gwilym had posted Powell to intercept that traffic. They'd intercepted 5 small brigs which had, indeed, been laden with Harchong-cast bronze artillery, and Captain Powell had found prize crews to send them back to Claw Island. He disliked giving up the men for those crews, but their cargo of guns had been too potentially valuable not to send them in. After that, though, there'd been almost a full 5-day of boring inactivity before Lieutenant Commander Showale, in the 10-gun schooner Flash, on the eastern flank of Powell's formation, had spotted topsails further to the east. That had been the evening before, and they'd gone in pursuit, chasing all through the night by moonlight, and with squall slowly falling yet further astern. Now, the better part of 30 hours later, they'd finally overtaken the convoy, and the Dolorin galleons had peeled off and turned to place themselves between the pursuers and the merchantmen.
Showale never would have spotted them if not for the escorts, Stewart thought now. The merchant ship's masts were too short to sight until we got closer.
The fact that the galleons had betrayed the convoy's presence might turn out to have been something of a mixed blessing, however. All the Dolorin warships were larger than Squall. None were as large as Dart or Shield, perhaps, yet Stewart's best estimate was that they carried at least 200 guns to the truncated Carizian squadron's 144. The Dolorin weapons were probably lighter, yet that was still a considerable disparity. At the moment, Flash and her slightly larger sister, Mace, were both off sliding around the Dolorin galleon's rear. The pair of galleys assigned to the coaster's close protection were new, bigger, and more powerful than anything Dolar had taken to Armageddon Reef, but Stewart doubted they'd be any match for the nimble, well-handled schooner's carronade broadsides. Unfortunately, between the galleys and the galleons, it was likely most of the coasters would escape if they scattered soon enough. Each schooner might be able to run down 2 of them, possibly even 3 if they disposed of the galleys quickly enough, but there were 14 of them. If Squall and her galleon consorts had been able to lend a hand, the entire convoy would undoubtedly have been obliterated, which wasn't going to happen now.